Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Bet online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
What's up, Pels fans? Welcome to another episode of the Bird Calls podcast. I'm your host and contributor to thebirdwrites.com, Preston Ellis. Today, to talk about what has to be, I don't know, one of the wildest two-game swings in franchise history, we have our editor-in-chief, and I'm going to share a candid story that he just brought up. So I've changed jobs, and I'm a new dad, and frankly, it's just hard to find time to talk about the Pelicans. So when people reach out and ask, you know, for time on their pod, I try to be polite because I know all the people that have helped me in the past, but it's just hard to find time. So I don't have a lot of that, but I know my editor is like the heart and soul of the Pelicans news coverage, and he's usually available. So I always say, hey, why don't I pass you his information? I did this for Mr. Oleander today, and he wrote, you got to stop fucking doing to this to me, man. So that's it. No more podcast requests for Ollie Cassell. We're shutting everyone down. He's at its limit.
But what's crazy, Preston, is when we started this, there was like, what, one or two other pods. I mean, David and I would be on radio shows, but it was just like there was a selection of like 5, 6, or 7 at the most within like a 250-mile radius. Now it's just insane how many people are doing their own thing. And I don't know. You just can't devote that much time to everybody because you don't have that much time yourself in a day. So that's all I meant by that.
Yeah, radio shows used to reach out to me all the time, and I would just text them. I would just text them Ollie and Grubb's number, to be quite honest. I was like, I just don't have time anymore. Ollie, we're demanding too much of you, and you need a break, sir. We also we have host of Hard in the Paint and voice of ESPNU and fast rising in the media ranks. Every time I look on Twitter or Instagram, he's talking to somebody else important. He's going to be too important for us quite soon.
David's been killing it, man. Yes, absolutely.
I was going to play a fun like name game with you, but I thought, my God, we can't make fun of David because I just think about the story in the Bible and what a terrible person he was. And they dedicated a whole book to him. But this David is much better. How are you, sir?
What a horrible lead-in.
I know.
The worst hey, lead-in Rob, what's up? Ever. It's just bad on all fronts. I didn't like any of that. Oh, my gosh.
It's better than the team negative, the Etwan Moore lead-in. It's got to be better than that one.
Okay, but I mean, at least that one gave me like a rep. This is,
I get nervous introducing David because Ollie will laugh at pretty much anything I say, but I feel like if I go off the cuff on David, he's just going to reach through the computer and just knock me upside my head.
What is this? What is going on here? You're portraying me as this violent ogre, and I'm not. I am not that person. People meet me, and I'm a lovely person most of the time.
Most of the time. That's honestly true. I've spent a lot of time with David in New Orleans, but we're not here to talk about the Bible. We're certainly not here to talk about other Pelicans podcasts. We're here about this amazing weekend of basketball we had. Ollie, I talked to Mark Stein last night on the Locker Room app, and he called the Pelicans the most Jekyll and Hyde team in the NBA. And I think
I tweeted that.
Oh,
he's
did you really?
My shit again. No, I'm just kidding.
Mark Stein, you have been warned. Stop. I was actually listening to I can't remember who it was. I was listening to a podcast. I think it was Jason Concepcion, but he basically said, if you get mad at people stealing your stuff, which we argue about, he's like, that just means you don't have a lot of good ideas. And I was like, shut up, Jason. Don't you lecture to me, sir, through a podcast that I'm willingly listening to you, sir. So Mark Stein, you've been warned. But Ali, Jekyll and Hyde, it was yours first. Mark stole it from you like the monster he is. But talk about this weekend.
What's there to say? I mean, they had one of the worst losses to me in franchise history, right? They had, I mean, this team that has legitimate hopes, I still feel like, of making a playoffs when you look at the talent on the roster, when you look at what's been said, you look at what the direction of the franchise has been, and to have such a bust to come out of the All-Star break to where, I mean, the game wasn't even in doubt once you got, you know, what was it, about halfway through the second quarter, maybe a little bit more, to where, you know, the Timberwolves grabbed the lead. You just felt never confident that the Pelicans would come back. And the way the third quarter transpired, where they really just, you know, I mean, it was just one of, like I said, the worst performances you've ever seen out of a professional franchise that has really talented players. And then to come back less than 24 hours later and to basically make amends for what had transpired. And I know that Cleveland didn't play well, and pretty much everybody in post-game talked about that. But still, to come around and turn around, and your performance is really good, right? The effort level was consistent for 48 minutes. I was going to say hours. And I wish 48 hours. And for them just to have that swing, right? 30-point loss to a 34-point win. I mean, it just really does say everything about this team, this comprised roster this year. We have no idea what to expect, and I don't think that's a good thing, right?
No. Consistency is very valuable in the NBA, especially when you're trying to build what we always talk about, an identity, a culture. You have to have consistency. When you don't have consistency in its place, you have chaos. So 100% agree with that, even though the performance last night obviously left us with a good taste. I think it was a 40-point victory. You still have to be concerned that Zion has to deliver some kind of, I don't know, pregame speech imitating Stan Van Gundy just to get these guys engaged to play basketball. But Preston,
just to get the facts straight, it was a 34-point win, and Zion spoke after the game, right?
Ah,
gotcha. In the locker room, you know, usually the coach has something to say to the team. Well, Zion decided to basically, I don't know whether, we don't know the exact story, but we have some details, right, to where he mimicked what Stan Van Gundy would say in his words, not his tone, from what we understand. The only person that can do really good impressions around here, I think, is David Grubb. So, but anyway, Zion got an F in that grade. But yeah, it sounds like they had fun, right? So that's, you know, I think that's good when you have such a terrible loss and then you can turn around and of course, come up with a, you know, big victory for this team and be able to enjoy it and have fun. I think that's important. But of course, the question all our heads is, can they actually sustain something? So, yeah, I'm going to pass this idea and these thoughts on to David because I'm curious to hear what his take is because he covered last night's game.
So, you know, in my mind, it's always, you know, we look at each individual game because I'm always looking for that thing, that consistency. And that was the crux of my summary last night of the game was just, okay, they did it once. And we've seen them do it once before, you know, and people say, well, look, they beat Utah and okay. And they've lost two, you know what I mean? Like you could go down the list of who they've lost to
mm-hmm.
that they have an overall losing record against below 500 teams. And you have yet to play in many ways, like the rest of this stretch in March, how difficult it is. And not only difficult in stature, but the offensive ability of these teams when we know that defense is the worst by far part of this team's makeup. And so until you start to see stretches where they win 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10, then what are we doing other than letting them take you on a roller coaster ride? Because this is a team that still only has one 4-game win streak this entire year and mm-hmm. not a single 3-game win streak. And a few 2 games. They have more losing streaks of 3 games or more than they have winning streaks of 3 games or more. So what does that tell you? That, yeah, they're not as maddening as we think because they never win consistently enough to make you think they're going to. You know, the preponderance of the time, they're going to lose. It's just the how that makes it so frustrating. is because it comes from a lack of effort. It comes from a lack of personal adjustments. And last night you saw some of that. But again, how many times do we watch the Pelicans play against teams and they've been in the position this year of being relatively healthy, and other teams either have somebody coming just back from injury or they have multiple starters out with injuries, and they've lost to those teams and they've beaten those teams. And so I think, yeah, like Ollie said, you don't have any idea really who they are. There are some individually talented players who have outstanding nights, and most often that one is Zion Williamson. And then you have, but in no sense, other than last night, have do you really genuinely feel like this is a team?
Rob, I want to follow up on that. My biggest concern isn't the games at all. It's not the two games, even though it might be one of the most embarrassing performances in team history. Clunky losses like that happen. I guess you can qualify. What concerns me the most is Stan Van Gundy's comments after the game, where he said the practice coming out of All-Star break leading up to that game, I think he said it was one of the worst practices he had ever seen. And that one raises a giant red flag for me, because that means that either his message is lost, guys don't want to be there, guys don't want to show up, guys don't want to compete, and you're at a dangerous precipice of that part of losing buy-in. And we are just halfway through the season. Things can fall apart quickly. How can a coach, David, get the team back together now that that he's got the team back under his wing? Do you think they're in a position where he can still find that buy-in and get it out of these guys on a night-out, night-in basis? Or do you think something has to change?
Something has to change. Because mentally, again, this is a workplace first and foremost. It's a workplace. And a number of people at your, at this workplace don't feel secure. So if that's the case, buy-in is always going to be hard, because my motivation is going to change from day to day. I can never consistently give you. I might be able to give you 100% of what I have, but that day I might only be operating at 60%. Because mentally, if you're Eric Bledsoe, where are you mentally? Are you present every night? It doesn't appear that way. You know what I mean? Like J.J. Redick, is he mentally present in the same way every night? Though he's a professional and he shows up and does his job, I'm not saying he doesn't do his job. I'm just saying, are you in that place where you need to be an elite competitive athlete? Not just a great physical specimen. But I don't know how many of the Pelicans players are mentally strong, because we watch on a night-to-night basis where you see it, you know, where they give up, where the energy is palpably low. Just like last night, I'm sure for Ali in the building, it was palpably high. But how many times do you see this team cheer for each other? How many times do you see a guy rush to pick up another guy when he goes down? How many times do you see a guy willing to fight for another guy on this team when someone attacks the rim? You know, like, where do you see that? Who are those people? They don't fight for each other. They play basketball at times, and they play it well at times. But I do not see a basketball team, and I don't think that's all on the coach. I think that there is a lie when we're talking about a family culture. How can you have a family culture in a season and a half, and in both of those seasons, half your roster at least is going to turn over? Let's have a professional culture. Let's have a culture where people think they're going to win. I don't care about a family. Pelicans don't have to be a family. They need to be a basketball team. And they don't have enough professional and mentally strong and winning basketball players.
For sure. That was an excellent monologue. And I don't think we need to follow that up with Ali. But I do want to transition. He mentioned the environment, and he mentioned David Griffin. And one thing that we talked about last week was bestowing minutes. He had that monologue that Andrew Lopez posted about, you don't just bestow minutes on young players. You want them to earn them. And there's no sense in putting them into a losing atmosphere and developing them in that kind of environment. However, since coming back from the All-Star break, we've seen just that. And I know that we're resting players on back-to-backs. J.J. Redick is out of the lineup. So that's going to give minutes to Nikhil and Kyrie Lewis right off the bat. And when you do put them into the game, even though they're developing and they're getting better, It's more likely than not that you're going to lose games. The numbers speak for themselves. They both rank in the 11th percentile in the NBA. That's out of 100. So it's very, very low. It's growing pains. It's natural. The part that kind of stood out to me a bit more, Ali, even though he played, I think, well, the numbers still bear themselves out. The Pelicans are terrible when he's on the floor. Jackson Hayes, Willie Hernan Gomez really wasn't getting a lot of run. What did you take from that change in the lineup, Ali?
It's been a mixed bag since that change happened, but I will say in the last game, I felt like even though it was apparent, Jackson Hayes still really is terrible defensively, right? Naz Reid had no problems backing him down from almost a three-point line on one play and then caught it in the post and made a simple move to over his right shoulder to where Jackson was standing or expecting a baseline, some kind of move, and he's literally still standing there when Naz is already letting go of the shot, right? He was that late and reacting to it. But offensively, I felt like he provided a decent punch to where, you know, he just made himself available near the rim and his activity. And I will say this, since he's been reinserted in the lineup, I think his activity level has been higher. It's been noticeable in the way he's trying to chase down blocks, the way he's, you know, putting forth even more effort and getting from spot A to spot B, whether it's the right line, whether that's what he should be doing or not. So the effort is there. And I think that's the right move. I honestly think development is now everything with this team. I know that they're still within striking distance of the play-in tournament, and that probably should be a goal. I mean, let's face it, 10 of the top teams in the Western Conference get to play past the regular season. You should be shooting for that when you've got Zion and Brandon Ingram and several other really good players on this team. But, yeah, overall, I mean, Jackson, he's still very much a mixed bag, but I am in favor of seeing him getting more playing time. And even though Billy Hernan Gomez on a given play is a better, I would trust him more, right? Whether it's on offense or defense, you still have to be looking to the future. And Jackson Hayes, whether right or wrong, whether he pans out or not, is part of that future. So you've got to have a look at him now.
Yeah, I think that's fair, David, but If you are going to put in those young players, which again is speaking against the credo that Griffin spoke last week, you have to expect that you're going to lose games. You're going to struggle, and obviously these guys are going to improve, but you're going to be inconsistent. And if you're going to be inconsistent, then we get to the question, what are the Pelicans doing with Eric Bledsoe, with J.J. Redick once he comes back? And I talked to Mark Stein on the Locker Room app, which is really, really cool. Suggest you guys check it out.
Yeah, by the way, Preston, tell us the story. How did you get into contact with him? You just reached out to him on that app and he responded or what? Because I don't know how it works.
So Clubhouse and Locker Room are very similar. They're just professional, like, opportunities for you to join a conference or a seminar. And while you're at that seminar, you actually have the ability to speak to the moderator or the host. What you do is you do what's called raising your hand. And if that person accepts you, which they typically do, then you get to go on stage and you get to talk to them for a few moments, maybe even a few minutes. I was up there for about 5 minutes. So it's a wonderful opportunity to not only like listen to some of the leaders in the industry, but also to network, like also to get to talk to people. It's super, super cool. And I can see why people on the internet are taking to it, and it's growing so quickly, and they have large resources behind them. They've got some big, big names. I saw Tim McMahon was on there earlier. I'm trying to think. I don't remember who else, but I can't remember it. Anyway, I'll think of it later. But basically what Mark Stein was saying, David, was that the Pelicans have been actively shopping Eric Bledsoe, but they're just not getting whatever it is that they want in the deal. To me, it's at a point where you just have to cut bait because something with this roster is not working. And I don't mean working in terms of wins. I mean working in terms of buy-in. And you have to think, like you said earlier, that those players whose futures aren't certain have to be at least partial culprits. So to you, is it time to get rid of Eric Bledsoe, even if you get nothing for him, even if you just have to, frankly, buy him out?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like you, this, no matter what, even if they were to make the playoffs, this is not the group that's going to be back next year. Eric Bledsoe is not going to want to come back next year. J.J. Redick is going to be a free agent. We know he's not coming back next year. So you've already wasted the opportunity to get them when their value is at its highest. So now why would the Pelicans be in a position to demand anything from people? So just give it away. Because as Ollie and I have said before to each other plenty of times, addition by subtraction is a real thing. Because what the first thing you're changing is you're changing the mood of your locker room. You take people out who don't want to be there. Those young guys, no matter what, they're still at the point in their careers where they have something to prove. And so if you put them on the floor, I don't think Kyra Lewis believes he's taking minutes. But if I'm Kyra Lewis and I watch Eric Bledsoe play 41 minutes and go 1-for-8 and turn the ball over and play indifferent defense, and I know I would guarantee, though we're not at practice, that Kyra busts his ass for practice for 2 hours whenever they do get together. or that he shows up for meetings on time or early, and that he does all those things, and then he watches the game performance and he says, I don't get more minutes. Or if I'm Nikhil and you say, I see these things and I don't get more minutes. The only person who could be in that position possibly where you say he hasn't earned it is Jax. But the other two, how could it be worse? How could they look at the coach and say, you're being fair to me? So my question always comes down to this. Who is really in charge of the roster? Is Stan Van Gundy in charge of the minutes that he's allocating? Is he being pushed by David Griffin or Trajan Langdon or someone to play people certain minutes? And if that's the case, how do you build a cohesive unit on a night-to-night basis if the team knows that the coach isn't in charge? How are they going to respect him? And how are you going to get the best out of them?
Yeah, and this, and just real quick, I want to jump in. And it makes you wonder, on those off nights where the effort level is in there, is something like that in play or partially responsible for what we see transpire, right? Eric Bledsoe comes out, and let's face it, his play has really dwindled. I mean, here in March, he can't make a shot. He can't make a play. He drives into the middle of the paint, and he's either not getting a shot off or really not making the offense, making any kind of positive impact on the offense. So, yeah, like you just mentioned, David, if I'm Kyrie, if I'm Nikhil, who are just, you know, chomping at the bit, and you can tell with these players, they just want to play. They're competitive. They've got this feisty nature that's just waiting to be unleashed, and you see that. Does that contribute to some of these off nights that the Pelicans are having? And does it take effect over the whole roster, which in fact is a very young roster? So I've got so many questions that, you know, I can't even give a response or an answer. Whenever somebody asks me a general question about where do I think this team's headed, where are they now, I can't give them anything that I feel like is a good educated guess. And what you just mentioned, that really has been on my mind. Eric Bledsoe getting 41 minutes, and I know you're referring to 42 minutes against the Chicago Bulls, where, I mean, the Pelicans just played, you know, they were off that night, and it's been like that. And yet Eric Bledsoe still starts, still sees those regular minutes, at least at the start of the first and third quarters. I don't understand the why. And this is coming off the heels of David Griffin getting on the ESPN New Orleans radio and talking about needing to earn minutes. Earn them ahead of who? How has Bledsoe maintained his position? I have a serious problem with that. I had it when he said it, and I've had it since then. I think that's one of his worst, maybe his worst argument, public presentation, whatever you want to call it, that he's had since he's taken over his job. It was so ill-timed, and it makes no sense. And it really, it just sits terribly with me.
Yeah, a lot of people turn a side eye to on-off numbers, efficiency differential, that sort of thing. I think it's a tremendous resource, especially when it's taken over the course of, you know, 1,000 to 1,500 minutes. And in that spectrum, we can analyze the effectiveness of Eric Bledsoe, and it's near where all the young players are. It's in the 40th percentile. Frankly, when Eric Bledsoe is on the floor, the Pelicans are not playing well. And you put the other starters, they start at 61st percentile, that's Zion, and then Adams at 78, Brandon Ingram at 87, Lonzo at 92. Obviously, we're being really, really tough on Eric Bledsoe for good reason, Grubb. But Steven Adams hasn't been that solid as of late. Of course, everybody.
I'll disagree with you. Since the All-Star break, I'll disagree with you, but go ahead.
But Brandon Ingram, there's a lot of highlights on Twitter right now of his defense getting carved up on the baseline. Just a highlight from I think it was Friday night. But Grubb, are we being unnecessarily, just in terms of our starters, harsh on Eric Bledsoe? Are other players in the starting lineup not holding up their end of the bargain?
Oh, absolutely.
That's a good question, yes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because Brandon Ingram, quite frankly, on a night-to-night basis, first his defense is just awful on a night-to-night.
On the off night? When he performs David Wright average to below average, his defense is beyond terrible, right?
It's he doesn't even give effort. Like, he's not getting in a defensive position. He's not making contact with his man. He's not aware of where his player is at times. I've seen him turn in complete circles away from the ball.
Against Jake Layman, that one play against Jake Layman, right?
Yeah. And the shots that Layman got in that game, there was no one within 5 feet of him.
Open threes, yep. Drives to the basket.
And I'll say this about Brandon, too. He struggles to adjust his offensive game when the defense changes it. an example I like that I'll use is Minnesota. You know, and you heard during the game, Antonio Daniels talking about, look, they're sending two. Every time Ingram gives the ball, they're sending two. Well, he's getting them at the top. And we know that the top is the worst position for the ball handler to get double teamed in because there's nowhere else to go except backwards. So, but Brandon would not adjust to that. Instead of saying, don't throw me the ball here and trying to change it up, which he actually did last night. And I mentioned that in the article as well. Last night, he looked for the bad switches. Against Minnesota, he didn't do that. Against a team that shouldn't have been able to defend him, even with the double. He didn't utilize screens. He doesn't work without the basketball. He doesn't go to his mid-range post-up that he used so effectively at times last year. So overall, you can look at the averages from night to night and they look the same pretty much. But the way he's playing hasn't evolved as much as it should have. Where we watch Zion figure these things out when defenses come at him in different ways and we see his brain start to go, okay, well, now I need to go this way. Or I can still go left, or I can move where I'm positioning. And there are things that he has to figure out. But we're at game 60. Brandon Ingram's in year five. He's in year five. So to me, that means that he has to start evolving a little bit more quickly. And so on the offensive end, he's got to evolve. And on the defensive end, he's got to commit. Because he's a worse defender now than when he was his first 2 years in L.A. And people were talking about he had the potential to be an all-NBA defender.
Sorry, I didn't know if you want to hop in there, Ollie.
No, I agree with everything David said.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you. I don't understand with Brandon Ingram, who seems very cerebral about the way the game takes place and the way he answers questions of post-media. I can see he understands the game. He can think the game. But yet within the game, it's the inexplicable nights where it seems like it's either he's not there fully, and as David mentioned, he's not striving to get the best shot that he can or put forth the effort to wherever it's required on the court to versus the good nights, like last night, right? And it's funny how I equate it to just a simple plays, getting a rebound, trying to put forth an effort to make a play somewhere that doesn't involve shooting the basketball or even making a play for somebody else. It seems like to me when he's got good rebounding numbers, the Pelicans are a much better team and they win. And I kind of looked at that last night and I didn't write down the totals or anything, but it seemed like whenever he has six or more rebounds, the Pelicans have won a lot more contests than they've lost. So I feel like he's a guy that needs to get himself going by doing those small things. And, you know, he hasn't done that. He looks exactly like the same player as last year to me. To whether you don't know if you're going to get, you know, good BI to where he's efficient, he's involved, he's engaged, to versus when he's not. And he's just not really helping the team, even though he'll put up 20, 25 points. So, yeah, I think David was spot on in his argument.
Oof. I do think that Brandon Ingram is...
Sorry. When you said oof, I don't want people to think that we're slamming players and we don't like them, because all of a sudden, this is something we need to also mention right here on social media. Whenever a player has a bad game, a bad stretch, bad run, it doesn't mean we're dismissing them completely, right? But you have to point out the faults. You have to make a logical argument on what you see, right? And it truly is in the NBA. It's almost from game to game, especially on young teams. So like I said, when you said oof, we have every right to criticize him when it's deserved, right? So, I mean, I don't know if David wants anything, add anything to this argument, but yeah, BI's been in the league for 5 years. So the expectation is he should understand of what's almost required from a night-to-night basis, and he's not really doing that yet. So that is my issue too, just like David's.
Yeah, it's never, ever about, I don't question, you know, I'm not here to question his work ethic. I'm not here to question, you know, his acting like that. I just, all I'm looking at is what you see on the court on game to game. And it'd be the same, like, and I'm not to pick on B.I. because all of a sudden there's been this, you know, trade Brandon Ingram crowd. No, I'm not part of that. I mean, that's not, again, that ain't even my job. I'm not a GM, but I could say this. There's a problem that you can have with every player on this roster that is not only significant, it's stagnant in that it's not getting better. So those are the things that you worry about, because they said player development was the focus. Well, my thing with Lonzo Ball is, yeah, he's shooting much better from three, but he's still missing layups. You know what I mean? And there's still times defensively when he, yes, he is a great instinctual team defender, but there are times when he gets beat off the dribble too often by players who are lesser players than he should be. And for Zion Williamson, still, I don't like nights where he has 4 and 5 rebounds, because the function to me and every, you know, of him grabbing defensive boards is to have him with the ball in his hands in transition, because he draws the defense and gives Brandon Ingram catch and shoot opportunities, because then you get Josh Hart streaking to the basket for a layup. Then you get Steven Adams on an early seal where you can throw it over the top and let him finish around the rim. Or Zion can go straight to the basket and get a basket or a foul. Those things don't happen when he doesn't defensive rebound, because the ball ends up in the hands of players who stop it, like Eric Bledsoe, like Steven Adams, who, you know, bless his heart, if he grabs the board, the first thing he's doing is looking backwards. He's not advancing it with a pass down court. So, yeah, that's Lonzo. And then if you want to talk about Zion, it's still the rebounding and the defense have to get better. They just have to, those two things, and his assertiveness at times. He has to demand the basketball. And I know everybody, well, he's in his second year and he's just played 60 games. If you're going to be the guy, there's no time to wait for it. There's no time to wait for it. You know what I mean? And you don't want to compare people to Jordan or Kobe Bryant. But if Zion is going to be on these charts with Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, well, all of those guys asserted themselves as the number one from the day they walked in the door. So Zion Williamson needs to say, give me the fucking basketball. And if you can't get it to me, coach, you better find some people who can.
All right. Brian, let's get into some questions. This is Brian, the UK Pelican. He says, is basketball fun to watch anymore? Everything is crunch, processed, and overanalyzed. We all become coaches and GMs saying what we would do. What happened to just enjoying the game? I understand where this is coming from, because for me, I even have to remove myself from social media because it can reach a very, very dark and twisted place. However, as basketball fans, we are just that. We're fans. We're fanatics. And it is, I think it's our right to enjoy the game in this format. But yes, it can reach a dark level. But in terms of NBA 2K, trade machines, that sort of thing, that's part of what makes the game great. It's the conversation. When people are talking about the game has the avenue to grow, to expand. Now maybe you don't like the way that the game is evolving. You don't like the trade machines. You don't like the three-point line and how the Houston Rockets have evolved the game in that form. And that's your right. But in terms of us, you know, talking about coaches and GMs and that sort of thing, I think this is an avenue that is making the NBA the forefront of the conversation. I can't remember what it was. It was like... I don't remember. It was like the Super Bowl or something a couple of years ago. And the NBA dominated the conversation during the Super Bowl because there was some mammoth all-star trade. And that is, I think, good for the game. Now, can we go too far with it? Absolutely. You're absolutely spot on with that assessment. Sometimes we can go a little bit too far. And that's why I have guys like Ollie and David Grubb to keep me in check. David Fisher, Chris Connor, I text all the time. And I'm like, hey, do I sound too dark today? Do I sound too negative? I think it's good to have people in place like that. Ollie, do you want to follow this? Am I just rambling?
No, you're not rambling at all. And you're coming up to a key point. Zion's 60 games in his career. So that means he's played that many games, if he's lucky. I'm sure Brandon and Lonzo and whoever is meant to be, at least, you know, here next year, it's too short to make some kind of evaluation to where, like, as David mentioned, as we've seen over the last, what, week or so, Brandon Ingram, maybe he's the guy that should be shipped out now. I can't stand this talk. I really can't. I've talked to Antonio Daniels. We've talked to a bunch of either former players, coaches like Jamel McMillan. It's all about what you bring to the table. So do you impact winning positively? And if so, do you have the potential for it? And that's where I feel like I always want to start my analysis on any situation, but I feel like almost nobody else does. And that's a problem for me. So no, you're absolutely hitting it right. So when you talk about, are these games fun still? Yeah, absolutely. I think every single game to me at some point, or excuse me, has certain extent, some kind of value, right? To where you can take something away. You should take something away from it. because everything does go on your resume for a player, for a team. So you should be able to add that to the totality to when you trying to summarize whatever it is, whether it's a player, whether it's the team, which way they're headed. So yes, every game is important, and I do watch every game, no matter whether it's a blowout or not. And I do take enjoyment out of that because everything really is. It may sound funny when coaches say this especially, but you do from game one to game 82 of the regular season, it is all honestly a practice to a certain extent. You're always trying to get better every day. So when people laugh at whether players say this, don't laugh at it because it really is the truth. Because really you can really make, you know, micro improvements almost week to week, game to game, to where it will help you in the playoffs. If so, your team ends up there. So no, I'm 100% on the side of please don't be turned off by a blowout loss. Don't be turned off by, you know, a team going through a bad stretch. No, it's telling you something about this team, this roster construction, where they should be headed. You know, there's a lot of questions that can still be answered. So no, every game is very important to me. And like I said, don't be evaluating from a summary standpoint, especially on a young roster, to where you know what the young core is, right? I mean, they didn't give Brandon Ingram a maximum contract with the thought of, okay, well, he kind of put up all-star numbers, right? And he can score efficiently, but we've got to throw that money at him because we're not sure if he's going to be honestly a winning, you know, player for our team long-term. That answer can't be made, but the thing is, he's trending upwards in his career. Just like any young player, that's what you look for is trends. And so I'm getting a little long-winded here with my answer, but no.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
It's so important with young teams, honestly, to take a lot of things with a grain of salt, but everything does have certain value and importance to it. So please don't get turned off by a bad week or something like that, would be my message.
Let's talk about our newest sponsor, eBay. From rare dead stock to the latest release, you can find the exact sneaker you're looking for on eBay. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to cop the pair you've been eyeing. And with eBay's authenticity guarantee, a team of independent professional authenticators perform a rigorous inspection of the sneakers you purchase before they're sent to you, so you can shop confidently knowing your pair is the real deal. And for the sneaker sellers out there, eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers $100 or more, making it free to sell or flip your collection. With other sites taking as much as 25%, you're going to have a lot of extra money left for, you guessed it, more sneakers. Check out ebay.com/sneakers today. Bet online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine.
BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Do you want to follow that, Grub?
Yeah, I'll just say quickly that, you know, my first love is the game. You know, yes. Above teams, above any individual player. You know, so I try to make sure, and I think there's a balance on our site. You know, there are people who are Pelicans fans. There are people who are basketball fans. There are people who are look at it from different perspectives within that spectrum of are better at the analytics, and some are better at the overall, just from the distance part of it. And so I think that balance is important to have in your conversations outside of our little room. So when we do that, I think that's what keeps the game enjoyable for me, is that I can be snarky and I can be silly and I can be funny at times with my tweets, but it always comes back to the basketball. You know what I'm saying? I don't have an agenda. I'm not looking to get people really, you know, it's not to, because I don't like that person. It's because I don't like their basketball right now. And I think that there are ways it can be improved. And sometimes that means this guy has to go, or the team needs to adjust in this way that I see it. But ultimately, I think if you love basketball, if you love anything, a person, a sport, at some time, music, at some point, you're going to hate it, because it's going to be doing something either as it evolves or as it stagnates that you just don't enjoy. But ultimately, that love is what gets you through that. And you get back to the core of why you love it, and you continue to appreciate it. And that's the way I'll always feel about basketball.
Yeah, I'll just take this back to one of my favorite moments as a Pelicans fan. It was watching a Tyreek Evans, Anthony Davis game against LaMarcus Aldridge and Damian Lillard. I want to say it was 2015. Anyway, it came down to a final possession. Tyreek Evans hit like a 16-footer. And then on the other end, Anthony Davis had superb individual defense on LaMarcus Aldridge, and he missed the potential game winner. But before that sequence, the Pelicans were up by three. I think there was like 30 seconds left in the game. And Damian Lillard came up. I want to say it was like from maybe 35 feet. Like, he just stopped like basically at the logo and I knew it. I was like, he's going to make this fucking shot. Like, I know he's going to make this shot. And it was awesome. And the rest of that run in 2017, 18, I remember the first game against the Blazers that we won. And I was like, I was excited. But when they won game two, I thought, oh shit, they can steal this entire series. Like, we might be advancing to round two. And it's moments like that you really, really yearn for. You just want a winner. You want some consistency. And I think fans have a right to be frustrated, but just to bring it back to Brian, it can go too far. So I just want to appreciate that. All right, let's go ahead and move. Before we get to another Pelicans fight question.
What?
Sorry, it's hard for me to think and read at the same time, but I'm working on it. This is from Clint White. He said, if you had to fight one zoo animal and win, but have it look like a realistic, balanced fight, what animal would you pick? I want to start by saying I absolutely would not pick. Was it the jaguar or the leopard at the Audubon Zoo that escaped and like went on a killing spree, like killed a bunch of I don't remember, ostriches?
Are you kidding
like,
me? This question
I'm
is
not
easy
fighting
for me. Anything bigger or stronger or faster than me, I'm not even getting in the cage with them. Are you kidding me? This one's straightforward.
I'm fighting koalas. Like, that's what you get me in there with. I will tear koalas' ass up. Bring me a marsupial that is smaller than me. Don't bring me a kangaroo, because a kangaroo
they'll box your ass off.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not fighting no alligators. I ain't fighting no monkeys. I ain't fighting no chimpanzees, gorillas. Those things are strong, they're fast, and they're agile. What am I going to do against those things?
Give me a bird.
I'm not fighting
an insect.
A goat.
Give me a snake.
I'm not
spider.
Fighting, you know, nothing with four legs that can run fast. No. Give me a give me something that clings. Let me fuck up a sloth. I will whoop a sloth's ass.
I was
going to
say sloth.
But I'm not going to do with nothing else.
I was going to say sloth.
Good one, David.
Originally, I was thinking emu, but as he started talking about something that can bob and weave, and I was like, yeah, there's no
way. Like, dude, you don't
want to
fight a raccoon. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to go. A raccoon will do some damage to you.
Yeah. So we'll settle with sloth. Thanks for that one, Clint.
I would kick the shit out of a sloth. I don't care.
I feel like I would give up midway through.
I want to see this now.
The press, don't we want to see this now? David's talking so much game here. I kind of want to see this.
All you sloths out there, I don't care if you're sleeping or hanging from a tree. If you want some of this, if you want some, tweet me, DM, I will be there.
Oh, my God, I'm crying. That's amazing.
Me too.
Oh, God. Okay, back to the
Pelicans. We needed this laugh, by the way. This is good stuff, man. This good is work, therapy. Bud.
All right, Samuel Wilcher, this is something we ask on every pod because, frankly, I just don't have an answer, and I always bring it back to Ali because I know that he's attending most of these practices and games, but I just cannot understand it.
I don't attend any practices. Get that straight quick.
All right. But I just don't get it, and I know that a large populace of the Pelicans population is of the same mindset. How is it that Wenyen Gabriel's not getting any time?
Easy answer is he hasn't impressed enough for where Stan Van Gundy feels comfortable inserting him into the rotation, right? And I'll be honest with you. I mean, I didn't watch any G League games, so I don't even know what kind of actions he's had there. But we did see him come into the last game, blowout against Cleveland. And honestly, I didn't see anything that made him stand out, even on back-to-back possessions where I said, oh, look at that. Well, we could use, you know, the Pelicans could use that in future games. Sorry, no, I didn't see like either defensive pursuit, rebounding, some kind of offensive display. So, no, I honestly think that Stan, I asked him this question a couple, you know, what was it? I want to say like 5-6 weeks ago, because we were wondering where is, you know, Mr. Gabriel? And he just said, yeah, he's just not ready yet. He's still progressing, but I don't feel comfortable and even thinking about adding him to the rotation yet. So I think it's a really clear-cut, dried answer. If he's not going to impact winning, why should Stan throw him out there? If we're not in a full-blown rebuild, and it's basically strictly developmental minutes that you're mostly concerned about, then Wenyen doesn't deserve the court. So I'm going to side with Stan here on that one and just basically agree that, look, Mr. Gabriel, he's just not ready. We know what we saw, right, in the playoffs, where he had some momentary glimpses against the Lakers and Anthony Davis, but apparently he has not shown that yet here in New Orleans.
Well, that's an unfortunate answer, but I don't think we need to follow that one up with Grubb unless we want to. I think it's just frustrating for fans seeing, you know, Jackson Hayes out there, Nicola Melli out there, and it's like, these guys are obviously struggling. Why not give this kid a look?
Well, let's be fair, though. Step back for a second. Wenyen came into the season injured. So he was already, I think he had maybe one and a half practices in training camp. So that's putting him way behind the eight ball when he's already going to be one of, what, 8, 9, 10, 11 hopefuls in the rotation. And he couldn't even meet that, you know, level, that bar. So you're comparing him now to Melli and Jackson Hayes, who Jackson Hayes was drafted eighth. He's automatically going to be given the, you know, benefit of the doubt in terms of minutes. And let's face it, Jackson has now been showing glimpses. When you want to point to Melli, Melli brings something that I know we haven't seen very much of, but we saw it last year, right? He can spread the floor. He also knows how to kind of play defense in terms of a team's, you know, scheme, schematics. He knows the right positions. Wenyen's very much still a novice, especially in professional basketball. So let's just put them on equal footing, I guess is what I'm trying to say here.
It's a very small sample size. It's under 200 minutes, 170 minutes. But when Melly's on the floor, the Pelicans score 12.4 points less on the offensive side of the floor per 100 possessions. That ranks him in the second percentile out of 100. Again, a small sample size.
Preston, but what about defensively? I know that honestly, when he's been on the floor, even though whether it's not because of him or not, the Pelicans are a much better defensive unit. Right.
You sneaky bastard. You're absolutely correct. I don't even want to mention it because it's so staggering. I don't even want to believe it.
But see,
it.
That's what the coach factors in, right? You got to see what works. So whether he's making shots or not is irrelevant to whether a team, it impacts winning, correct? It's a five-man rotation is what coaches look at. It's not what a person does individually in the box score.
I feel like what happened was I just put you like in a figure four leg lock and you just reversed it on me and I tapped out.
Sharpshooter.
He is in the 100th percentile on the defensive end of the floor.
Oh my, wait, what was that? 100th?
100th.
Wow.
The, The Pelicans allow 16.2 points less per 100 possessions when he's on the floor. So he's a perfectly mediocre player. Second percentile offensive side, 100 percentile.
But let's be honest, those numbers aren't doing justice here. We both know that he's not typically as bad as he should be, even though he can't has no confidence shooting the ball. But defensively, he's no wunderkind.
Last night he didn't really play great defense. You know, like last night, he was just around because the game was over. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like defensively, he didn't make an impact or an imprint. And that's
where he made an impact, David. Think back to, for me, it's the Boston Celtics game, right?
No. Well, yeah, he's part of the closing unit and he moved the ball. That was primarily it because he only hit one shot.
Yes.
But primarily his
corner three offense was big, but yes.
He kept the ball moving. But it feels like a lot of times he does that because he doesn't want to shoot because he's so worried he's going to miss. But at least he is moving the ball in that regard. And defensively, he does he maintains contact. That's what he does defensively. He maintains contact because he knows he's slow.
So and he understands the game, right? When you watch his movements, right?
That's what I'm saying. So he knows he to compensate because if you come from Europe, you're playing a space game naturally. So covering people and knowing where you need to be position-wise is very important because you see more zones, you see different looks. So I think that's part of the benefit there. And he's also older. Remember, too, he's seen more than a lot of these other guys in the rotation. So I think that all those things are factors. No, he's not an elite defender, but yes, he takes less off the table than a lot of these other guys just by. And this is a lot of the things with the Pelicans in general. If they just didn't fuck it up so bad, they'd be better. But when they mess up in the worst way possible.
All right, we'll do about another 10 minutes and then we'll get out of here. I have to ask this one, Grubb, and we've got a couple of questions about it from AJ Vallon. It's Prime. Basically, just tell us where you stand right now with Lonzo Ball. Is he still on the trade block? Are you ready to pay him? If you are willing and ready to pay him, how much are you going to offer him? Where do you stand with Lonzo Ball today on whatever it is, March 13th, 2021?
I'm not trading him. I'm not doing that now. I need him. Because if I'm going to have any semblance of continuity on this team the rest of this season, I need Lonzo. And again, he's my restricted free agent, so I have right of first refusal on anything. Now, the conversation I have to have is with Zion, with B.I., and with Lonzo. Those are three very important conversations to have, because if I decide financially that it is not feasible to hold on to him, and the Pelicans have to be really prepared to let him go in that case. And that means talking to Zion and making it square with them before they even make that move. Because you don't want this to become something that lingers in how they view the franchise. So there's more than just his play at play here. So I think that I'm not trading him this season. I don't know what the dollar figure is appropriate at this point because I don't know the NBA cap, where it'll be next season. And I don't know what other teams are going to be throwing his way and who's in play. But if I'm the Pelicans, I'm telling Lonzo, whatever you do, come back to us. Even if you're not sure you want him, you make sure that he feels wanted so that you're not negotiating more against yourself than you could potentially be.
All right, I'm going to move on to the next one because I imagine Ali is of the same thought. Are you of the same thought, Ali?
Yeah, it's real simple. I mean, I think like David Griffin has always talked about Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball together, and what they want to do here after they draft a Zion is look at them as part of the future. So I don't think anything's changed, especially in light of his play since his knee injury, right, where he missed the three games. You can't overlook what he brings to the court. You just can't. He's improved from three-point range to where I don't care whether he's got gravity or not. That's going to come in time once the Pelicans start winning. But the fact that he's up there amongst the elite in terms of volume three-point shooters, you can't discount that in today's game, especially alongside Zion Williamson. And we've always talked about the little things he does. I mean, it's so obvious to me when I watch a game to how the ball moves, to all these small plays that don't factor in a box score, but it makes it either easier for the team to get up the court, get an easy basket, you name it. Lonzo is usually the guy that's responsible for those actions. So that's very important. And so, like I said, I see his true value to this team. And I'm pretty sure that the Pelicans do as well, especially since now, like I said, you know, a secondary scorer on the perimeter or even a secondary playmaker. And I think that we've seen that come and go, and you hope that some consistency takes place there. But I've seen games to where he takes it more to the hoop than, you know, we saw in previous iterations of him in previous years. So I feel like there's still – you still don't know what his ceiling is, but either way, you feel comfortable with having him alongside Zion, especially past this year. So that's why I've been in favor. Until you show me a player that you can get to replace him that will impact winning more and fit with Zion better, then I am all for keeping Lonzo. And I think it's really that easy of a conversation to have.
Yeah, he's 14-5-5 in just 31 minutes a game, 38%, over 38% from three. I know the second half of the season for him has been much better than the first half, so he's getting better. Also, I keep going back to it, but cleaning the glass, he ranks in the 92nd percentile in on-off court effect. So the Pelicans are 11 points better than their competition per 100 possessions when he's on the floor. That's tops on the team. So when he's on the floor, the team plays well. It just is what it is. It's 1,100 minutes, so it's not a small sample size.
He impacts winning. That's all that matters.
Yep.
All right, Grub. Actually, I'm going to run through this and see what you think of my list. Mosley season says trade destinations for Bledsoe and Redick. I brought this up to Mark Stein, and he's seen...
The moon. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, he seemed pretty intrigued. I said Danny Green because you just want to get off salary, and you know you can buy him
Danny
out.
Green with the Sixers?
Yeah. Yep.
They're not moving Danny Green.
You don't think so?
Why would Sixers Griff, first of all, take it back? What's Green going to give you?
He's not going to give you anything, but his contract is expiring, so you get off the books.
But Philly, why are you going to get smaller when you're playing against the Nets? You know, like that's who you're trying to be ready for. And you know you have to match shots with them. Bledsoe doesn't give you any kind of defensive advantage if you're Philly against Harden or Kyrie based on what you've seen this year. So where does Bledsoe help you? Because at the very least, I know Danny Green can be a knockdown shooter for certain in the postseason. And I know that he's a good enough team defender that he won't hurt me. So, and your Doc Rivers, you're trying to sell championship culture. You're going to dump the guy with five rings?
Yeah.
For Eric Bledsoe? Exactly. Nah.
For a guy that's not done anything in the playoffs. Exactly. Makes no sense.
What about Gary Harris?
Why would Denver do that?
What?
You think?
Well, for Gary me, Harris, why are you taking back Gary Harris if you're David Griffin? I don't see that one.
Yeah, if you're committed to Kyra and Nikhil, Gary Harris, again, doesn't help you. You don't. If you're the Pelicans, the only players to me, and I don't care if they get a player back. That doesn't even matter this year if they get a quality player back now, unless you're adding somebody who's a wing defender. But other than that, you're just trying to clear the deck here. That's my thought for Bledsoe.
Yeah, here's the thing. Why are you moving Bledsoe? Because you don't want his contract on the books for next year, but you're going to take Gary Harris, who's I think he's right. He's got another year after this year. So I don't see any reasoning behind that move whatsoever.
Guys. Whatever $6 million it is off the 2023 season, you get off that just one season earlier. But okay, all right.
No. Preston, right? Bledsoe is owed, he's got a contract through 2022, 2023, right? I know $4 million guaranteed, but Harris still has another year for next year. But it's essentially to me a trade that's. I don't see it.
You just get off the books one season earlier, but I get it.
$4 million earlier. I don't know.
Spencer Dinwiddie is an intriguing one. Obviously, he's out for the season, so the Pelicans would just take him either just to save the money going forward, or they could negotiate with Spencer Dinwiddie that he has to buy into his player option next year, which I can't remember. I think it's between $7 and $10 million. And you wouldn't mind that because he's a solid six man. What do you think about a Spencer Dinwiddie trade? I'll start with Grubb.
I don't know when he's going to be healthy. That's my biggest thing is like if I don't get him back till after the All-Star break next year, then it's not worth it to me. You know, I think that there are going to be options because if I resign, you know, if I bring him in to lose him, or to only get half a season to look at him, again, it doesn't help me in the thought of continuity, trying to get this team to have some stability.
I'm more liable to take a shot on him because from what I've heard and read that he could potentially come back at this season. So if it's even that close, then, you know, you have to expect that he should be ready for next year. But on top of that, I like what he brings, right?
I do like
the culture
him. Yes,
factor
like
and all that, right, David? And I feel like that would be a benefit, even if, you know, say he doesn't accept his player option, which I think is for a little bit more than what you said, Preston. I think it's over 10 million, somewhere 11, 12, 13 million range. But I think that's doable, right? If he's in your top 6, 7, 8 rotation, then for what he brings to the court, that's very doable. But yeah, the thing, of course, is if it's a straight flip for Redick, I'm all over it. Probably for Bledsoe too, but I don't see how the money works there for Brooklyn. So I don't know. That one's, unless it's just for Redick almost straight up, I don't see how that deal happens.
All right. The last one that I have is Josh Richardson, who still has $11.6 million player option next year. And you'd have to imagine he's going to pick that up. So you probably wouldn't do that for JJ Redick because you don't want that money on your books. You'd rather just buy out JJ Redick. But would you do that for Eric Bledsoe? You save, I don't know, $6, $7 million off your books next year. And, you know, you can possibly, you know, buy him out going into next season, or you can try to flip him, take his salary and combine it with somebody else. And you save whatever that $4 or $5 million is in 2022, 2023. What do you think of that, Grubb?
Interesting. I mean, it's interesting. I'd take that more like, because again, you're getting a wing defender. I would take a wing defender in Josh Richardson. I know he'll compete. I know he'll do those things. And I think I'd have an option with him if I don't want him to be able to get something of value in return. So I'd be okay with that.
Ollie?
What's he got left on his contract? Didn't he just sign a new one?
No, $11.6 million in 2021, 2022. That's a player option. So you might potentially have him for another year at close to $12 million.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too bad. But, you know, it goes back to me. This is an easy one. He's a wing player. And I look at, I hate to say it, but his stature. He's 6'5". I want somebody that's going to be coming in to be able to guard threes because I want to see Brandon Ingram at the two. So he's 6'5", and he really is his best position is guarding twos, and he doesn't shoot the three ball particularly well. No, I would pass on it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I don't even know that the Mavericks would take Bledsoe. I don't know if Bledsoe is a superior player to Josh Richardson. I honestly haven't watched
I would
him
say
that
no.
Much.
I mean, yeah. Not at the value.
Yes.
Yeah, I would think they would want J.J. Redick in that deal, and then they get off of his salary, and then the Pelicans are stuck with another, you know, $12 million for next year. So I don't know that it makes sense for either party. But that's all we got for today. It is 10 o'clock my time, and I'm super old, so I got to start getting ready for bed. But I want to thank the two of you. Reminder, you can follow them at DM Grubb and at Ollie Cosell. But let's be honest, if you're still listening to this podcast, you're probably already following them. Ollie, what are you up to, my friend?
Well, we got the Clippers game tomorrow, so I'll be covering that one. But in due time, I do want to write something up on Lonzo. So divisive, but I just want people to look past, you know, the contract issues, because I feel like the ones that are willing to accept him long-term are having a real tough time squabbling over a few million, right? I seem to get a lot of answers. If the average cost per year is somewhere in 18 to 20, maybe $21 million range, They'll take him, right? They want to see him here for over, you know, at least the length of most of that contract. But if it jumps to a figure 22, 23, 24, they're out. And I just don't know why that line kind of exists, right? If you can make the rest of your roster fit that money, and why are you drawing the line there in the sand, I guess? And so, yeah, I just want to take a deeper dive into explaining to why I feel like Lonzo Ball, unless you get some super talented, you know, a trade that David Griffin can make, bring in a player that can basically replace what Lonzo's given you, but also be that much more beneficial to the team going forward alongside Zion,
yeah,
then why wouldn't
guy.
You want to keep Lonzo regardless of whether it's a few million dollars here or there? So
exactly. To me, if you move Lonzo like that, it could be, and I'm not trying to, you know, scare anybody, but it could be one of those Rondo to AD moments. Where people start, where those guys, if you're Zion and I'm really comfortable, and Zion and B.I. have both gone out of their way.
Yes.
To make sure that they compliment Lonzo. And I think that is a statement not only to Lonzo.
How crazy was that hug B.I. gave him? Lonzo makes a three in the game that's not over, and B.I. literally comes up and hugs him. What the heck? How often do you see something like that? I never see that.
And when Brandon Ingram won Most Improved, I remember that Lonzo was one of, or maybe it was the All-Star when he was appointed an All-Star, but he had three people on the Zoom that were there to congratulate him, people that were closest to him, and it was Lonzo. And I wrote an article about Zion's relationship with Lonzo last year and all the advice that he goes to him for. At to me, the three have to stick together. And I just think it's that simple.
And here's another thing. Lonzo Ball never tweets. He's never really does anything on social media. But guess what? As soon as Zion Williamson's little video from the Pelicans was put out there on social media, he's retweeting it. I don't know. That says everything to me.
For me, and maybe I'm a victim of a small market, and we can't go a whole podcast without mentioning Jrue Holiday, but when you have, let's say, a top 40 player under the age of, you know, 25 years old, unless that player wants to leave, if they're performing, I think you got to keep them. And even though Jrue Holiday was about 30, I'd call him a top 25, top 30 player. If he wants to leave, or if he wants to stay, I'm not moving him. I think it's hard to acquire top 25, top 30 in Lonzo's case, I'd say top 40 level talent, and especially at his age, it's hard to find those players. And of course, you collect this like bevy of draft assets with these delusions of grandeur that you're, you know, going to be getting, you know, Zion Williamson every year, these top five, top 10 picks that are immediately going to merge into all-stars. And you see with Jackson Hayes, that's not always the case. It's hard. It's I wouldn't call it a crap, go as far as to say that it's a crapshoot, but you're not guaranteed anything. So when you do have those guys in the building and they want to be in the building, you want to keep them around. I think it's that simple.
Yes.
All right, friends. David, was there anything we missed? Is there anything you're doing this week that you really want our listeners to check out?
I will be talking with Wendell Davis, former LSU player, on Tuesday. And then, of course, you know, the podcast is available most weeks, but most days of the week. But I do have the announcement that I'll be working with Rob Parker, former print
That's
journalist.
That's huge.
Yeah, that is huge. on his new website, MLBBro.com, which focuses on the past, current, and future African-American ball players. So I'll be doing content both on video and doing some writing for that. And it looks like MLB is really excited about it too. So just another thing on the table and maybe some other stuff in the works. So folks, stay tuned.
We'll just have to ride your coattails as long as we can. Right, Ollie?
Heck yeah, man. Dave is awesome. That's I miss awesome. Going to games and sitting down and just watching a game and for us to talk, man. This
I
pandemic world sucks.
I miss it so much. I really do. Because that one time that we got to be together and we're like, you know, you're 20 seats apart. And I'm loud, but I don't want to be that loud.
I know.
They
would have
heard
horrible.
Me on the court.
Yeah.
And a quick PSA to everyone, if you have the opportunity to get the vaccine, I highly recommend it. I have not gotten it as of yet, but a lot of my friends have gotten it. Both sets of my parents have gotten it. Congratulations. I think that it's really, really important. I'm not going to force anybody to do it, but I think it's really, really important to resuming some normalcy. And the scientists seem to trust it. There's a zero hospitalization rate, zero death rate. So if it is something you feel comfortable doing, I highly, highly recommend it. And honestly, I could get emotional about it, but I feel like we're close. I feel like a bunch of my friends are calling up my wife who's in the fitness industry and saying like, oh my God, I might have to go to social events again. I might get called back into physical work. I need to like shed these 10 pounds that I've gained. I need to go get my hair cut. I need to dye my hair. And that's how I'm feeling. I'm super, super excited. And I think that we might be at the end of this.
Preston, are you kidding me? Are we going to get a chance to see you and little Gracie in person someday soon?
The hardest thing for me, I mean, I haven't lost anybody, so obviously I'm doing really, really well. My wife and I are doing it as best as we can do given this situation. But one of the hardest things for me to talk about is my daughter's turning one, and I don't know, six people have been in a room with her. And we've tried to be super, super cautious, take every precaution. We just like want to do what the scientists and the doctors recommend. My dad used to be a doctor. He's retired now. And we try to follow every protocol, but it's hard to say like, damn, man. A year's gone, and like I never got the chance to like be a dad in front of my friends. I never got a chance to like see my best friends, my family, like hold her and smile and laugh and giggle with her. Like that year is just gone. And I know that like everybody will say like, well, you got to treasure those moments with her. You're at home every day, so you really didn't miss anything. Even if some others did.
No. It's different. I know it's different for you, and I would tell you as a father who you know got to experience that first year. The way I wanted to, I can't imagine what it would be like because being outdoors with my daughter and you know just that interaction and watching her eyes light up when she met new people. No, dude, it's something that the only thing you're really hoping is that it doesn't change them too much because that's a big those first years. There's so much information that they want to take in. and it's changed. You can't give her the same amount of information. So you did lose out, and you're not bad for feeling that way.
Thanks, man. So I hope everybody's doing really well, and I know that in Florida, at least 5,000 people a day are still contracting the disease. So still, by all means, you know, take the precautions, do what is recommended by the CDC. But I just...
Mask up, or Sam Van Gundy's going to find you.
Yeah, I just feel really, really hopeful in a way that I haven't in what's been a year. So thanks, gents, for listening to that monologue. Thanks, Ali and David. I am Preston. Thanks to our listeners for joining us in the locker room. Like, that was awesome. It was so nice to like hear your voices.
I love that, by the way, Preston. That was you and Chris. I was laughing. I loved it.
I mean, Lewis came up on stage. Yes. We talked to him for 5 minutes. It was just so nice to have verbal interaction with some of the people who listened to the show. So thank you so much. We're going to do it again soon. And I hope you'll join us again then soon. But for now, let's dance. Let's go Pels.
Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.